All right, so today we are going deep on a Supreme Court case that's all about your rights. Specifically, what happens when you're in police custody, you've asked for a lawyer, but the police, they just keep trying to question you.
Yeah.
We're talking Edwards v. Arizona.
This case, it really gets to the heart of, you know, this tricky balance.
Yeah.
How do we make sure law enforcement can do their job but still protect individual rights? Especially for people who are suspected of crimes, you know.
Right. And we've got some pretty interesting stuff to work through today. We've got excerpts from the actual case itself, the majority opinion, two concurring opinions, and we've also got some really insightful analysis to kind of help us navigate all of this. So to set the scene, it's 1976. Robert Edwards is under arrest in Arizona.
He was facing some serious charges.
Robbery, burglary, even murder.
And, you know, this is where those Miranda rights everyone hears about on TV, they actually come into play.
Right.
So he's read his rights, agrees to answer some questions at first, even gives an alibi, but then things change.
So he decides he wants to try to, you know, make a deal. He asks for a lawyer.
Right.
And that's when questioning is supposed to stop, right?
Yeah.
And that's what those Miranda warnings are all about.
Absolutely, yeah. The Miranda rights, they're very clear about that. You have the right to remain silent and you have the right to an attorney during questioning.
But here's where things get tricky. Even though Edwards had asked for a lawyer, the police, they go back to him the very next morning, read him his Miranda rights again, and this time, he confesses.
Confession.
So this is what ultimately ends up going all the way to the Supreme Court. Did Edwards waive his right to counsel when he confessed? Or was this, you know, a violation of his Fifth Amendment rights?
Big questions. And the Supreme Court, they decide it was a violation. And they establish what's become known as the Bright Line Rule, right?
Okay.
The majority opinion, it was written by Justice White. It basically drew a clear line in the sand. Once a suspect asks for a lawyer, the police cannot reinitiate questioning unless the suspect, on their own initiative, decides they want to talk.
So even if they read you your rights again, it doesn't matter.
Yep.
Once you ask for a lawyer, I have to stop questioning you.
They have to stop. Yeah, the majority really wanted to get rid of any gray area, you know, protect individuals from feeling pressured to talk without a lawyer there.
That makes a lot of sense. But here's where the case gets even more interesting, and I have to say, kind of more confusing for me. We've got two concurring opinions, meaning two of the justices, they agreed with the outcome, you know,
yeah.
that Edwards' confession, it couldn't be used, but they disagreed with the majority's reasoning. What's that all about?
It just goes to show you how complex legal issues can be, right? You can have multiple brilliant legal minds all looking at the same situation, you know, looking at the same constitution, and still come to different conclusions about why a decision is right.
Interesting.
For example, you've got Chief Justice Berger. He believed that the focus should be solely on whether the suspect voluntarily waived their right to counsel. He didn't think it really mattered who started the conversation.
So, for Berger, as long as someone seems to be willingly giving up their right to a lawyer, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of whether they were prompted by the police. That seems, I don't know, that seems like a bit of a loophole, doesn't it?
That's a valid concern.
Yeah.
And, you know, Berger felt like the circumstances in this case, there was no way Edwards could have voluntarily waived his right to counsel, right?
Okay.
The detention officer, he'd basically forced him to meet with the detectives again. But yeah, it does make you wonder, how do you determine if someone is truly acting on their own free will?
Yeah.
Especially when they're in police custody in that situation.
Yeah. And what about the other concurring opinion? What was their take?
That was Justice Powell. He was joined by Justice Rehnquist. And he was actually worried that this bright line rule, this focus on who initiated the conversation, would actually make things more confusing, not less.
Oh, okay.
He thought the courts should take all the circumstances into account when deciding if someone gave up their right to a lawyer, not just focus on who started talking first.
So he was worried that this, you know, seemingly simple rule could actually make things more complicated out there in real world situations.
Exactly. Like, what if a suspect just starts casually chatting with a guard, you know, just making small talk?
Okay.
Could that be seen as the suspect initiating conversation? And then would that mean the police could start questioning them again?
Mm-hmm.
Or what if they legitimately changed their mind and want to talk to the police without their lawyer? Should they be prevented from doing that because of this rule?
Wow. Yeah, those are some really tricky questions. So it seems like this bright line rule, which seemed so clear at first, it's actually a bit more complicated when you really start thinking about how it might actually play out in real life.
It is. And that's exactly what we'll be exploring more as we keep going deeper into Edwards v. Arizona. You know, this case, it's not just some legal footnote. This continues to have implications today for how police conduct interrogations.
Okay, well, this has certainly piqued my curiosity even more. Let's dive into those real-world implications. Okay, so we've established this bright line rule isn't quite as straightforward as it might seem at first glance. But before we get too lost in the hypotheticals here, can we talk about what this actually means for people, you know, out there listening who might find themselves in a situation like Robert Edwards is?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this case, it's a huge reminder that those Miranda rights, they're not just words they read on TV. You know, if you were ever taken into police custody, knowing your rights and how to use them clearly, that can make all the difference.
So bottom line, if you ask for a lawyer, they have to stop questioning, period. Unless you decide you want to talk again. Right,
exactly. The whole point is to give individuals more control, you know, over their interactions with law enforcement. Make sure they aren't feeling pressured or coerced into saying something they might regret later.
This bright line rule, it really seems to act as a safeguard then against, you know, those classic coercive interrogation tactics we always see in the movies.
Yeah, you could say that. I mean, put yourself in that situation for a second. You're in a stressful, unfamiliar environment being questioned by experienced detectives. It's easy to see how someone might feel pressured to talk, even if they've said they want a lawyer.
So this rule, it acts as a kind of protective barrier then, ensuring that the suspect has the chance to actually consult with their lawyer before they say anything that could be used against them.
Precisely. It gives people a clear, unambiguous way to stop the interrogation and wait for their lawyer to be there.
But going back to those concurring opinions for a second, they did raise some, you know, pretty thought-provoking questions about how this rule actually plays out in real life, didn't they?
Oh, absolutely. It's one thing to have a rule written down on paper, but it's another to actually apply it, you know, to the messiness of human interaction. Justice Powell's concern about what actually constitutes a suspect initiating a conversation is a perfect example.
Can you give us, for instance, like, what if a suspect just says hello to a guard in the hallway? Does that count as initiating contact?
That's exactly the kind of nuance that courts have been wrestling with in the years since Edwards v. Arizona, you know? What about if they ask for a glass of water? Or what if they just mention something about the case, but in a casual way, not really directed at the officers?
It does seem like there's a lot of room for interpretation there.
There is, and that's the challenge with any legal ruling, right? You want clear rules to make sure things are fair and consistent, but you also need some flexibility to take into account the unique circumstances of each situation.
And it seems like with this particular case, even the justices themselves, they had different interpretations, even when they agreed on the outcome.
Exactly. Edwards v. Arizona really shows us how the law, even though we want it to be black and white, it's often full in gray areas. You have different perspectives, different priorities, and even when really smart people agree on the answer, they might disagree on the why.
So what should our listener take away from all this back and forth among the justices? What's the key insight here?
It highlights how complex the law can be, for sure.
Yeah.
And it reminds us that legal decisions are made by people, you know, subject to their own interpretations, their own biases. And it encourages us to think critically about this constant tension that exists between individual rights and the need for effective law enforcement.
It's not just about blindly accepting a ruling, but understanding the nuances, the different perspectives, and the potential challenges that come up when you actually try to apply it.
Right. And that's true for so many areas of law, not just this specific case. Edwards v. Arizona is a great example of how a seemingly straightforward rule can actually raise a ton of really complex questions.
Well, I'm even more intrigued now. We've talked about the historical context and the legal complexities of the case. Mm-hmm. But how does this case actually affect how police operate today? What are the lasting impacts of Edwards v. Arizona? Okay, so we've talked about a lot here, the history, the legal arguments, the ins and outs of this bright line rule. But I think the big question our listeners have is, what does this actually mean in the real world? Mm-hmm. Like, how has Edward v. Arizona changed how the police operate and how the courts look at confessions?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the answer is it's had a pretty significant impact. I mean, in this case, it's a foundational case in criminal procedure, something that every law student studies, and its principles are applied in courtrooms across the country every day.
So this isn't just some abstract legal concept. It really have real consequences for how police interact with suspects and how the courts decide what evidence can be used.
Exactly. Edwards v. Arizona is like a powerful reminder that the Constitution and the rights, it guarantees it's not just some old document. It's something that's still relevant today that protects all of us, even when we're accused of doing something wrong.
It's about making sure everyone gets a fair process, regardless of what they're accused of. That's a pretty powerful idea.
It is, and that's why understanding these rights and how to actually assert them is so important.
But, you know, while this case is definitely a win for individual rights, I'm curious, does it make things harder for law enforcement? Do people argue that these restrictions make it harder to actually catch criminals?
That's a debate that's still going on today. Some people say that cases like Edwards, they tie the hands of police, make it harder to get confessions, even from people who are guilty. But on the other side, you have people who say that these safeguards are absolutely essential to protect innocent people and to prevent false confessions, which unfortunately do happen.
So it's about finding that sweet spot, right? Protecting individual liberties, but also allowing law enforcement to do their jobs well.
Exactly. It's a balancing act, and it's constantly being tested and adjusted as new situations come up, new technologies are developed, and new legal precedents are set.
It seems like Edwards v. Arizona has really given us a lot to think about, both in terms of its effect on the legal system and in terms of the bigger questions it raises about individual rights and the role of law enforcement in our society.
Absolutely. It reminds us that our legal system, while not perfect, is meant to protect us from overreach and to ensure that justice is served fairly and impartially. And that's something worth considering.
I think that's a great note to wrap things up on. We've covered a lot of ground here today, and it's clear that Edwards v. Arizona is much more than just a legal footnote. It's a landmark decision that continues to shape how we think about the balance between individual rights and effective law enforcement.
And it's a good reminder that the law is always changing. What might seem like a clear rule today could be questioned and reinterpreted tomorrow. It's a constantly evolving process, and understanding those complexities is important for everyone.
Well said. And with that, we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. What are your thoughts on Edwards v. Arizona? Did the court get it right? Let us know. This is a case that really gets people talking, and it challenges us to think critically about the foundations of our justice system. So keep those conversations going, and we'll see you next time for another deep dive.